climate change has been an issue because not only does nature change the climate, but in the last 50 years, humans have been competing with nature. When our individual activities, you know, like burning coal, oil, and gas, emit stuff, we've been using the atmosphere personally, you know, corporate-wise, nationally, and globally, as a free sewer to dump our tailpipe and smokestack wastes and the consequences of, you know, land clearing. As a result, there's 40% more carbon dioxide and 150% more methane. And without going into all the numbers, this is an inevitable consequence of lots of people in the world demanding higher standards of living and using cheapest available technology to get there. So to solve the problem, you've got to start transitioning away from the polluting technologies, but we've got trillions of dollars of established interests in the polluting technology, so they actually have a vested interest in denial and in maintaining the status quo, and as a result of that, this problem has been dramatically more contentious in the public debate than it actually is inside the scientific community, where there are very few people who doubt the basic ideas who actually do climate research.
And, of course, the Copenhagen conference is coming up next month. How important is it for the United States to have climate policy in place before that conference?
Well, Copenhagen is where all the nations of the world get together and try to fashion some kind of compromise. The U.S. has got to be a main player. After all, if you go over the last 80 years of the history, the U.S. is in the dubious distinction of being number one in terms of the country that's emitted more tons of carbon dioxide and other greenhouse gases into the atmosphere than anybody else. China is now number one in the annual emissions, but because they've been poor for a long time, they haven't come close to catching up to us and accumulated. So we got to have China and the U.S. in some kind of deal there, because if the two biggest guys don't do it, then most of the rest of the countries are going to be cynical and aren't going to do much either. So it's critical to have the U.S. on board. And, of course, in the Bush administration, they were hostile to this. I mean, after all, the president and vice president were CEOs of oil companies, and it was their companies and their friends' product that was producing the problem. So they were a vested interest in denial. But that's not true anymore. And the U.S., I think, is going to try to do as much as it can, but it also has a reluctant Congress, because people in Congress worry about interests in their state, not national interests, let alone planetary interests.
We're speaking with Stephen Schneider. His new book is Science as a Contact Sport, Inside the Battle to Save Earth's Climate. Last week, we saw that the Kerry Boxer bill passed out of committee. Can you tell us about that bill and what do you think its future is?
The Kerry Boxer bill is the Senate's attempt to try to match the Waxman-Markey bill in the House. And, you know, something must be right with it, because, the deep ecology groups hate it, and the fossil fuel industry hates it even more. And that's because it had to do what you always have to do in Congress. It had to steer a compromise between long-term national interests and short-term local interests. So what the Waxman-Markey bill did is it did put controls on the emissions of greenhouse gases, which will reduce the market share of the fossil fuel industry. But it also gave fairly long lead times for a number of industries. It's not a lifetime exemption. Then the bill would have been terrible, but it gives them a transition time. And that's where environmental groups were angry, because it wasn't tough enough. On the other hand, if you try to get everything you want the first time around, you often get nothing. So it was a compromise. So what you asked about now, which is the Senate bill, the same thing has happened. It was very contentious in the Environment and Public Works Committee, because the minority, basically, which I'm sorry to say collects an awful lot of money from the fossil fuel industry, would not brook any compromise whatever. They simply had to be politically overpowered, and they wouldn't even participate in the debate. They boycotted. As a result of that, what they're going to do is go up there and try to turn this into a big partisan issue in the next election. And it's not about the national interest. It's about the partisan jockeying about whether you believe in collectively protecting the country and the planet, or whether you believe protecting entrepreneurial rights is your first thing. It's very sad when an issue that's about our children, grandchildren, and nature gets tied up in this kind of ideological partisan politics. Unfortunately, in Washington, that's the story right now.
And finally, Stephen Schneider, I'd like to have you give us a little bit of background about your history in climate policy. You've been around during a lot of the debate. Just tell us something about that history.
Well, the first time that I know of that climate change issues were brought up to the United States Congress as a policy issue was 1979. That's 30 years ago when we talked to Ribicoff and Muskie about the fact that Jimmy Carter, who really tried to do something about energy, made one what we thought mistake. He wanted to use oil shales. Those are the rocks out in the West, and they're very, very polluting because he didn't want to have us depending on foreign supplies of oil, which we all agree with. That was the wrong way to do it. He also supported, you know, renewables. He put solar collectors in the White House. Reagan ripped them off. So we actually knew back then what to do, and we've been arguing for 30 years. And the reason that we failed to accomplish the mission is the combination of scientists being very conservative and liking to be sure, and they're always leading with their caveats. Sorry to say, lawyers and spin doctors and special interests out there who'll say anything about anything and find a PhD they can hire to say it, and a media which is all too, you know, steeped in political reporting, get the Democrat, get the Republican, giving equal time and status to positions that aren't scientifically remotely equal, and how can the public be anything other than confused? So we've had stasis for 30 years, which is exactly what the interests wanted to do. And Obama's the first one to come along in a long time and actually have a Congress with a chance of moving beyond that.